It must be that time again. Time for WISA Weekend, your weekly radio magazine. I'm Jerry Kenny. Thanks for joining us this Sunday morning. Coming up on today's program, the report cards have come out for public schools in the state. Ohio Public Radio's Karen Kassler will tell us how they performed this time around. We'll also hear about the debate over gun-free zones in Ohio, and we'll answer the question, why is the Miami Valley a tornado hotspot? That's coming up on Why So Curious. Up first, overdose deaths continue to rise in southwest Ohio. The opioid epidemic is also taking a toll on the courts as more and more addicts end up behind bars for drug-related crimes. To help mitigate overcrowding, some Miami Valley counties are launching special drug courts. The courts offer nonviolent addicts a chance to avoid jail and get the services they need to stay clean and out of trouble for good. WISO Community Voices producer Jason Reynolds has been following one of the newest drug courts in Clinton County. Reynolds reports the program is already having an impact, but it's no easy fix for the county's serious addiction problem.
It's Friday night at the Presbyterian Church in Wilmington. About 80 community members have gathered for a drug court graduation.
I do good in life, but the dope keeps me from doing better.
Graduate Sandra Lamb is at the pulpit sharing a rap she wrote about heroin addiction.
Freedom will be here for the all of us, although it might not be here today.
Lamb is only the second person to graduate from Clinton County's U-Turn Recovery Docket. It's a drug court program that requires participants to be clean and sober for 18 months. Clinton County is small, with just over 40,000 people, and it's been struggling with opioid issues. So, Lamb's success is a big deal for the court and the community. It's also a milestone for Lamb. She says completing the program has given her new hope for the future.
I'm trying to get my kids back. I have a 7 and an 8-year-old.
Lamb is one of the lucky ones. On the other end of the spectrum is Jason Green, who used to go by the name Jake. He was originally scheduled to graduate with Lamb, but he relapsed and overdosed. Judge John Reddick oversees the U-Turn Recovery Court. He talked about Jake's death during a court session earlier this year.
They found Jake in his bedroom, dead. And they found a syringe.
Reddick points to the chair that Jake used to sit in. It's empty, and there's a black sash with Jake's name on it. Reddick tells participants the chair will stay that way.
I want it to be a visual reminder, not just of Jake, but how you can't get too confident. Because you can be in here one day getting promoted and people clapping for you, and you could be dead the next day.
There are over 50,000 people incarcerated in Ohio, and Reddick estimates nearly a third are low-level offenders who could be better treated in the community. In his chambers, Reddick tells me he decided to start the U-Turn Recovery Court 2 years ago in response to the number of cases he was dismissing as a common pleas court judge.
I was dismissing cases because people were dying. They were dead, and they were young people. I started realizing after 30 years on the bench that maybe we needed a different way of doing things with regard to drug-addicted folks.
Ruddick says, in his experience, jail and prison time seldom solve addiction problems. He says drug sentencing laws are sending too many addicts to jail.
We've got to do something about it. We're at capacity. The director of prisons, Gary Moore, says he can't build another prison.
Drug courts have been around for a long time. To avoid conviction, participants are required to complete a strict program involving court dates, recovery meetings, and random drug tests. Ruddick says U-Turn Recovery Court is designed to be therapeutic, and that's pretty apparent when the court is in session. The judge doesn't wear a robe, and the participants don't sit at the defense desk. They fill up the jury box first, which gives you the impression they're being judged by their peers and themselves. At the end of each court session, the judge asks a different participant to stand up and talk about their recovery. In court, a few months ago, a woman named Amy read a poem she wrote.
This addiction had me for such a long time. It was hard to think I would ever be fine. I just want it one more time to get high.
Ruddick came out from behind the bench. He told Amy he was proud of her, and he gave her a hug. Amy has 4 children. After court, she told me what the program has meant to her.
It has gave me hope every day, you know, to know that the court isn't just against you. They're actually here to help you, and they kind of show you you don't have to always be scared, and you don't have to be away from your family. And because I kept running and running and running from my problems, and finally I got sick of running.
But a few weeks later, Amy was on the run again. She failed a drug test. Judge Reddick gave her a warning and said he might have to send her to inpatient rehab. But Amy never came back. The judge issued a warrant for her arrest, and she's currently in jail awaiting a hearing. For WYSO, I'm Jason Reynolds.
And there is some good news. Court participant Sandra Lamb, who rapped at her drug court graduation, recently regained custody of her children. She's also working a full-time job. For more information about the U-Turn Recovery Docket, visit us at WYSO.org. Ohio's school report cards are out, and the state says its 1.7 million school kids are doing better academically across all subjects and across different economic and racial groups. But State House correspondent Karen Kessler reports there are mixed grades for Ohio's public school districts and mostly bad ones for the charter schools.
The report card signed letter grades to districts and charter schools for the previous school year in 16 categories, based on data from tests, attendance, graduation, and other information. Just under 4% of the state's 608 traditional public school districts got A's for how their students did on 26 state tests. More than 80% got F's. State School Superintendent Paulo DiMaria suggests checking other categories as well.
The indicators met really represents a very high bar because you have to have consistently very high performance across a large, you know, a large number of the indicators. What I tell people to do is, hey, look at the performance index. That's a lot more granular, a lot more nuanced.
Most districts got C's in that performance index, which measures individual student achievement. But DiMaria says the statewide performance index is up 2.5 points, the third largest increase the state has ever measured.
What I take away from this report card is the momentum that's in the system, right? We've set higher standards. We know it takes time for a system to calibrate to those higher standards, and the kind of direction and momentum that we're seeing is exactly what we want to see. Many of those C's next year will be B's, and we'll keep making progress.
As for the state's 276 charter schools, many of which were listed as not rated, more than 90% got F's in indicators met. And for the student performance index, most got either D's or F's. Aaron Churchill is the Ohio Research Director at the Fordham Institute, a pro-charter school group. He cautions against making an apples-to-apples comparison between traditional public schools and charters.
Charter schools and urban district schools, where most of the charters are located, fare pretty poorly in terms of the proficiency-based metrics that Ohio uses. A lot of those low grades is largely a reflection of the achievement gap, where lower-income students tend to lag behind their more affluent peers.
And that's also the conclusion of the expert who runs the numbers for the traditional public schools.
The data is as stark and as clear as can be, that the districts at the top who kids do the best on these standardized tests are the districts with the lowest poverty.
Howard Fleeter with the Ohio Education Policy Institute says the new report cards back up what he's seen over the last 20 years.
2 years of the new tests with several years of the old tests, several years of the tests before the old tests, we're still seeing, it's that the achievement gap between low-income students and high-income students is the most persistent problem, I think, that we've seen in public education.
Another area of concern on the state report cards is the Prepared for Success grade, which measures how many students got good scores on college entrance exams, earned honors diplomas, or secured industry-recognized credentials. All the charter schools that were rated in that category got D's or F's. And two-thirds of traditional public school districts also got those bottom two grades, which is a big increase from last year. The Department of Education says those numbers reflect a transition to higher standards. But there was some good news with graduation. More than half of the public school districts got A's, meaning at least 93% of their students got diplomas in 4 years. But the bad news is that Ohio's 8 biggest school districts are graduating fewer than 79% of their students, which earned all of them F's in that category. Karen Kessler at the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau.
And we'll stay with the State House for our next story. The debate over gun-free zones is back in full swing at the State House as lawmakers argue which should take precedence, the rights of gun owners or the rights of property owners. Andy Chow reports.
A pair of Republican lawmakers want to allow a certain group of people to carry a concealed weapon wherever they go, even into gun-free zones, such as schools, daycares, and courthouses. Representative Larry Householder of Glenford says that restriction should be lifted for off-duty peace officers.
They're trained professionals that know how to deal with horrid circumstances. And quite frankly, I think it's in their best interest and the best interest of the public for them to use their expertise off duty as well as on.
Laws that weaken gun-free zones are not new at the State House, such as a provision allowing anyone with a concealed carry permit to carry in these areas marked as gun-free. Part of the problem, according to Householder, is that the signs declaring a place as free of any weapons makes it a target for anyone who wants to carry out an attack.
They're generally cowards. They don't want to be faced with a firearm themselves. And their biggest fear is either a law enforcement officer or a citizen that is armed and trained and law-abiding.
But Householder met resistance from House committee members during a hearing for his bill. Democratic Representative David Leland of Columbus says property owners have made a personal decision to not allow firearms on their grounds.
That have signs up that say no guns allowed in these particular premises. We're going to allow them to ignore those particular signs put up by people in private property and still carry their weapons into those places of business.
We trust these people every single day to go into these stores, go into these areas that are gun-free while they are on duty. And all we're saying with this legislation is while they're off duty, they're allowed to go into those areas just the same as if they were on duty.
Leland also asked Householder and his fellow Republican Representative Laura Lanise of Grove City, a co-sponsor, about the definition of a peace officer. As Leland points out, that definition covers a wide array of officials, from natural resources to taxation.
You have a lot of people that otherwise some people might not think would be fall into a definition of peace officers. Do you envision all of those people being covered under this legislation?
These people have been thoroughly vetted, thoroughly trained, and will likely be in a lot of the scenarios where we would like to have on hands people to be able to respond to an incident that might arise.
Previous bills that allow certain individuals to bring their guns into gun-free zones have been thwarted. A major opponent to such bills is the Ohio Chamber of Commerce, which says it believes they undermine business and property owners who've chosen to ban weapons. And while Householder says the public would be grateful to have an armed, trained officer in the event of an attack, Leland says those property owners have assessed the risk and have made their choice.
I think it's up to the individual to make that decision. I mean, this is still a free country the last time I looked. And I'm always concerned when government tramples on the rights of individuals. And right now, this bill would be trampling on the rights of people and their private property.
The bill had its first hearing in committee. No word yet on if it's on track to move forward in the near future. Andy Chow at the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau.
I'm Jerry Kenny. This is WISO Weekend on WYSO. Thanks for joining us this Sunday morning. This week on WISO Curious, we answer two listener questions about tornadoes. First, why is the Miami Valley a tornado hotspot? And second, how does the National Weather Service go about alerting us when a tornado is approaching? WISO Curious intern Liam Niemeyer started his search for answers in Clinton County near Wilmington.
You can see where the National Weather Service station is in Wilmington miles before you reach it. A giant white ball towers above the farm fields in the area. And the locals have a name for it.
We call it a golf ball. And, you can find that very, very easily. And being only two in the state, this one stands out pretty much down here.
That was Terry Kerr from the Clinton County Emergency Management Agency. Kerr is a part of a group of people that have their own corner inside the NOAA office to use for amateur radio, a.k.a. ham radio. Ham radio uses short radio waves to connect people around the world.
This is KDGH. Anybody out there listening today?
In the corner, Mark Atwell and I are trying to contact someone using ham radio, which looks like a gray metal box with lit-up dials. Finally, we reach someone.
In the building, using the rubber duck.
All right, Roger, I understand. Rubber duck's just a flexible antenna on top of a small handheld.
People like Kerr, Atwell, and Paul Ganringer are a crucial part of what's called the Skywarn Weather Net.
We would go on the radio and make an announcement like, this is WXAWIL from the National Weather Service office in Wilmington, Ohio, activating the Skywarn section net at the National Weather Service office.
The Skywarn WeatherNet is a group of hundreds of volunteer ham radio operators across the Miami Valley in southwestern Ohio that send severe weather reports from the field to people at Gehringer and Atwell inside the NOAA offices. NOAA meteorologists use these reports along with what they're seeing on the radar to send out tornado warnings for the Miami Valley. This group was founded in the 1970s after meteorologists realized they needed a better way to report tornadoes. One particularly violent tornado caught their attention.
Our radar screen is now moving into the city of Xenia. Persons in the city of Xenia and along the track just...
What you hear is archived news coverage of the 1974 Xenia tornado. Ever since, ham radio operators have been helping the National Weather Service spot tornadoes. These ham radio operators are dedicated, even in potentially life-threatening situations.
It was a couple, a man and a woman, both of them amateur radio operators. They were reporting a funnel cloud that they were seeing off to their west. They lived in a house trailer. And I remember them telling our net control operator, we're heading for shelter. If our house is still here, when this is over, we'll call you back.
Even though these ham radio operators have experienced many tornadoes, none of them think the Miami Valley is a tornado hotspot, and data from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration backs them up. Counties in the Miami Valley get just as many tornadoes as other parts of the state. Ohio University professor Jana Hauser studies why tornadoes form.
I don't necessarily know where the perspective comes from, but oftentimes, in fact, almost every single time I've ever looked into this, there's not a truly scientific signal or even scientific significance to the claims that the local people are making.
When I asked amateur radio people about it, some of them pointed to the possibility that better technology like smartphones has given the false impression. Here's Terry Kerr again.
Instant communication. That was the difference between when I think I was young and now. I'm certain they were there, but nobody knew about it until 3 days later or a week later.
Severe weather can sometimes hurt cell phone reception, making communication through smartphones ineffective. That's why the National Weather Service goes to Terry and others. Ham radio works when other forms of communication don't.
This place accepted us, used us, and gave us meaning. When they get involved here, it affects 52 counties. And that's the purpose. That's the meaning. And it gave ham radio, I think, some legitimacy.
For WYSO, I'm Liam Niemeyer.
Why So Curious is sponsored by Proto Build Bar, proud supporter of Curious Minds. You can ask a question for Why So reporters on our website, WYSO.org. Lawmakers in Ohio and other states are calling for an investigation into a recent data security breach. The breach at Credit Bureau Equifax compromised the financial data of roughly 143 million Americans. To find out what consumers worried about identity theft should do to protect their credit, we sat down with Tim Brandon at the Consumer Credit Counseling Service in Dayton. Tim, thanks for speaking with us today. This is a big deal that I don't know if as many consumers that need to know about this situation know about it and are paying attention. What advice do we have for consumers at this point?
Well, in this case, I believe that Equifax is offering a protection package to people for free that will monitor what's going on with this breach, and I'm sure it would show any other breaches or any other fraud or identity theft. So people can go on to Equifax.com and it will kind of guide them through what they need to do. Is you're going to have to put in your name and you're going to have to put in the last six digits of your Social Security number in order to find out. And then it will lead you to a site that will tell you if they believe you've been included in this breach or not. I did this myself. And it told me that my information was included. So then you can go to another screen that will fill out, you'll have to fill out a lot of personal information, which I would not normally advise, but this is a huge issue. I would go ahead and take their offer on this one.
What a monumental task it would be to monitor. We're talking 143 million people here.
Absolutely. It's huge.
What else might consumers need to know?
They might want to, on their own, go ahead and put either a fraud alert or a credit freeze on their report with the other two bureaus as well, because not every creditor reports to every credit bureau. Now, they're supposed to share their information, but they don't always. So it might not be a bad idea. Now, a fraud alert is only for 90 days, and there is no charge for that. What a fraud alert does is if a creditor is opening a line of credit, that creditor has to make sure that you are who you say you are when you're opening that. Now, a normal fraud alert's 90 days. An extended fraud alert lasts 7 years. Again, no cost on this, and it's not quite as inconvenient as putting a freeze. If you put a freeze on your credit report, then that means that they have to check back with you, make sure that you're the one involved. And so if you're thinking, for instance, that you're going to buy a car or get a home loan in the near future, it's really going to cause you some inconvenience, because you're going to have to prove that you are the one actually taking this action, which will take a little time, and it could delay your loan process.
So resources for consumers, obviously looking into the protection that Equifax is offering, and then agencies like yours can also help with this?
Absolutely. We'd be happy to talk to them. If they can go to annualcreditreport.com to pull a credit report. That's where we always advise people to go to get their report. That was a site set up by the government so that people could get a credit report from all three bureaus once a year at no cost. You're not going to get a credit score, but in this kind of a situation, you don't care what your credit score is. You just want to see what's reporting, what your trade lines are. Make sure that there's nothing on there that you don't recognize that's not yours, or there's been no activity. For instance, would there be inquiries on there that you have no clue what they are? That's the kind of things that you're going to be looking for. And then that might lead you to whether or not you want to go ahead and put the fraud alert or freeze.
If this were to happen again, or maybe even as a result of this breach, do you see it as a game changer or a change in the relationship between credit bureaus and the consumers that they serve?
I can't help but believe because of this, there's going to have to be some new procedures, some new guidelines. I'm sure they're trying to protect information the best they can. Living in the electronic age that we do, for every new protection that comes along, hackers come up with a new way of getting around it. It's like it's a challenge to them. Now, will things change? I would hope so. I would hope so. But are we going to be able to stay ahead of it? I'm not sure of that.
Tim Brandon is with Graceworks Consumer Credit Counseling Services. Tim, thanks so much for your time.
Glad to do it. We're always happy to help.
Find more news and information on our website at WISO.org. I'm Jerry Kenny. This is WISO Weekend.
This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac for the first week of early fall, the third week of the cricket and the katydid moon. Fall does not come all at once with equinox. It's been coming since the 26th of June, when the days started to grow longer again, the northern hemisphere tilting away from its source of heat. The sun rose from the east-northeast and set west-northwest 3 months ago. Now it rises almost due east and sets due west. dawn and dusk continued to move south at the rate of about 1 degree every 72 hours until December solstice. The night sky is changing too, and the stars are predicting winter. By 9 o'clock, Cygnus the swan migrates overhead through the Milky Way, facing southwest into Sagittarius. Winged Pegasus is poised in the east. By 10 o'clock, the infallible sisters of autumn, the Pleiades, will have risen behind Bellerophon's steed, and then Taurus will come up and Aldebaran, precursor of January. Orion follows after midnight, so the way ahead is clear enough. Average temperatures, which varied only 1 or 2 degrees at the height of middle summer, dropped a full 4 degrees in August, and now they fall 4 degrees almost every week. Nearly 200 species of birds have begun to leave the region by equinox, and only about 60 remain, and those will be on their way at the close of October. By that time, the signs will be unmistakable. Leaf color will have peaked, and all of the wildflowers except a few asters and goldenrod and chicory will have gone to seed. This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac. I'll be back again next week with notes for the second week of early fall. In the meantime, go outside after midnight and find the Pleiades, a tight cluster of stars rising over the eastern horizon.
Bill Felker contributes to newspapers nationwide, including the Yellow Springs News. Bill resides in Yellow Springs. Poor Will's Almanac is also available as a podcast at WYSO.org.
That's it for this edition of WYSO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO, giving voice to our community, our nation, and our world. I'm Jerry Kenny. We'll be back next Sunday morning at 10 o'clock. Coming up next, it's Vic McCunis with the Book Nook.
This is Luke Dennis, WYSO's Development Director. WYSO leaders, our members who are able to donate $500 or more a year, are excited to invest in our vision to be the best small station in the country. And their investment ensures that this service will remain available for everyone here in our community. If you've been thinking about it and are able to support at this level, it's easy to sign up. All the details you need are at WYSO.org. Thank you.
Take a trip to the far reaches of space, time, and music every Sunday night on Alpharhythms. I'm Juliet Frumholt. Come along with me, and I promise I'll get you home refreshed and ready for the work week ahead. That's Alpharhythms, Sunday nights, 8 to 11 on WYSO.
Well, I look at it myself as the beginning, really, of an exploration. That's the reason we're exploring. You don't know what you'll run into on an exploration.